Welcome back to the Jack of No Trades podcast, a podcast about people and what they do. I'm your host, Michelle McAllister, and today's episode, we talk real estate and why finding a path that fits both your ambitions and your ideal lifestyle is key. I spoke with Jessica Foote from Native Real Estate based in Southern California. She founded the company during the pandemic, and with a growing team and new territories in sight, she has no plans to slow down anytime soon. She lets us in on the reason she went from sports medicine to finance to real estate, her usual morning routine, here's a hint, it's not for you night owls, and why yes is her favorite word. Here's my conversation with Jessica Foote.
So I'm Jessica Foote, and I run a real estate brokerage called Native, and I'm a California native, San Diego native, and we're in the process of growing the brokerage, and it's really exciting.
For somebody who's not aware of the difference between an agent and a broker, can you tell me what that is?
Absolutely. So the difference between a realtor and a broker is that there's a separate exam that you have to take. So there's in California, there's a salesperson exam that's a little bit shorter, and you don't have to have as high of a percentage to pass. And then for the broker's exam, it's a little bit longer. You have to have a certain percentage to pass. It's a little bit higher. And then you also have more of a work experience component to it. So you have to have been in the industry full time for a certain amount of time in order to get your broker's license.
Okay. So you can't just enter into the marketplace and just get your broker's license. You actually have to start as a real estate agent and then you graduate up to that level. Is that?
Typically, yes. It used to be different. You used to be able to have some education and, you know, if you had an MBA or something and had extra education, you could do it, but it's changed.
Yeah. And you went to school at Pepperdine and you studied finance. What did you originally want to do? What were you thinking?
It's been a journey, as I'm sure it has been for many people. So actually I went to Pepperdine because I was studying sports medicine. I actually studied sports med for 2 years, and my goal was to become a sports like team doctor for an athletic team. And I had wanted to be a doctor since I was tiny. So that was the plan. It was very clear. And I did it for 2 years. And then I was at a conference in Stanford, and this lady was like, being a doctor is so great. My husband and I are doctors, and we don't ever see each other, but like we each get to see our kids half of the week. And I just realized then and there, like, that's not the lifestyle I want. And it just, the payoff wasn't worth it for me. At that point, I actually decided to just follow my passion. And I was really loving at the time my sociology classes. So I actually graduated with a bachelor's in sociology, which at the time my parents were like flipping out and didn't think that that was a good idea, but it's actually worked out really well in my career now. So I have a bachelor's in sociology from Pepperdine, and then I also have an MBA in finance too from Pepperdine.
What made you go back for the finance? Was it that to add in something that's more quote unquote business, or?
Yeah. So it was just to like kind of round out my education, because at the time they weren't hiring anyone in sociology that was like in undergrad, hence my parents' concern. Right. So I decided to like balance out my soft science with like a harder science. And so it made me more hireable and just well-rounded. So I'm really glad I did it. It all worked out.
And you went into, I don't know if you went straight into this field, but Hewlett-Packard is that where you started, or is that one of your first-ish companies?
So I didn't start there. It was kind of interesting. I worked at Starbucks like from high school all the way through college and kind of worked my way up and used that as like my leadership skill, like development academy, if you will. And so I worked at Starbucks for almost 7 years. And then right before I graduated with my MBA, I actually got hired by a defense contractor in San Diego. So I worked there as a corporate like financial analyst for a year, and then worked at Hewlett-Packard after that. So I worked in marketing there and was kind of there when like it all was hitting the fan during the recession. And
yeah.
So that was that.
I think I remember bumping into you about that time. Mm-hmm. So what made you decide that you wanted to make the jump over into what you're doing now, real estate?
Absolutely. So I realized that I wanted homes to be like my product, if you will, when I worked at Starbucks, because I ended up being a Starbucks manager when I was working on my MBA, and my store was like killing it. And I had my P&L dialed and like marketing and all the things were all dialed. And I was like, I'm making so much money for Starbucks. And like, this is not a long-term strategy for me that'll work. So I was like, okay, I really love sales, love my customers. Like, what can my product be that'll be, you know, something where I can make an actual living and like love it too. And, you know, I'm driving back and forth to Malibu to go to class still. And I'm looking up in the hills and I'm like, okay, I'm going to sell mansions. That's what I'm going to do. So it was back then that I decided eventually I'd go into real estate. I didn't know when, but it was when, you know, the recession started hitting and I went out on maternity leave, and it was a really good paid maternity leave. And I was like, okay, this is the time to start. And so I started studying while I was out on maternity leave for my exam and all of that.
So you started right after the recession. What was that like in the beginning? Is that, I assume, a little bit rougher than I would than something like when we're flourishing?
Yes. Yes, it was a very different time. The good thing was, so I started in March of 2009. And the good thing was, like, everyone was panicking. Everything was changing. Like 75% of the home sales in San Diego were like distressed at the time. And it was just brutal. It was like a bloodbath. And so everybody was relearning, like, how do I sell a home, like via a short sale? Like, how do I sell foreclosures and all of that? So it was kind of nice, even though everyone was freaking out, because everyone was relearning. So if you were willing to learn, then you could do it. So it was the perfect time to enter. And ever since then, it's just been better and better. So it was perfect for me.
Do you see any parallels between that time and maybe what we've been experiencing lately with the changes? I think I've seen a lot of people panicking. I don't... Mm-hmm. I'm not a homeowner, so I can't say I know it firsthand, but even on the rental side, I have noticed some changes, some of them a little bit more challenging.
Yes. Yes. Finding housing in California, period, whether you're a homeowner or not, is just brutal right now. It's still such a desirable place to live. I mean, our weather is like nothing else, right? It's very diverse and people love it and jobs are here. And so it's just really competitive. Things are definitely changing. And I personally had a panic moment last week because I'm reading articles and learning about watching what's happening with like interest rates, and some of the spikes in interest rates and like how fast they're going up are like shocking the system, if you will. So like a lot of people that could afford a certain price last week, this week, they had to drop their purchase price by like $50,000 to $100,000, depending on their budgets and what they're doing. So it's major, you know, it's major for people. And it's just, it is going to impact the market. The good news is, like, since the recession, most people have put huge down payments down to buy, because it's been really hard to get a loan. So I don't think people are going to walk away from their homes like they were when they were getting like full 100% financing and they had no skin in the game, you know? But I do notice that a lot of my clients, some of my clients are very edgy right now. Some of them, their finances are not in order. And so that's like my biggest concern, is that like everything's been good for so long, generally speaking, but I'm noticing like people are still like really shaky after the pandemic financially. Like,
yeah,
they're still trying to recover. They're still trying to save money. You know, it's just, I'm noticing like a lot of people financially like aren't where they should be, which is easy to say, but it's been a hard several years for most people. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if the values do drop and just if people are going to be able to afford housing and what's going to happen.
Do you think, what is the average time it takes to sell a home these days? I don't even.
So in the area that I primarily work, it's about a month, you know, start to finish. It's about 30, 37 days, but usually still, I mean, we put a house on the market, it usually sells over the weekend. So it's still pretty active, but people are kind of scrambling to get houses, I think, before the rates keep going up.
What do you think is the biggest misconception that people do have about what you do?
People think that I make a ton of money and am just like super, super rich and I don't do a lot of work. You know, I think that's the stereotype with real estate agents, right? And yes, I make a really, really good income. I mean, that's why I do it. It provides for my family and it's great, but my taxes are huge. I mean, six-figure taxes, it's brutal. And I work a lot. If I'm in the flow, like I'm working 24/7. I mean, it's not that I'm constantly working, but I have to be pretty available to people. So there's that feeling that you're never off, which is a really like crazy feeling. Even if you schedule time to be off, things happen. So,
right.
You know, there's a sacrifice.
What would you say is the most important skill for your line of work?
I would say empathy. It's something that I have, that I naturally have. I don't know if it's that it's developed in me over the years or it's just the way I'm wired, but kind of putting myself in somebody's shoes and having the ability to understand where they're coming from, whether it's another agent that I'm negotiating with or my seller that's dragging their feet and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Having that empathy is like so critical. And the people that don't have it or very much of it, they don't do as well. Something that I found.
Is there anything that you wish you knew when you were starting out that now you're like, yeah, this, you need to keep this in mind as you go in here?
Yeah. I mean, I would say number one is just setting really clear boundaries on your time and hiring like the best assistant possible from the beginning would be really important. I would also say like saving more money, because I was working at HP and I had two little boys that were absolutely crazy and piling up bills and had bought a house. And again, it was during the recession that whole time. It was just insane. And, you know, healthcare costs were rising and everything was just crazy. And at the same time, I was working full-time at HP and it's a global industry. So I was on conference calls with Asia, you know, late at night and early in the morning with Europe. And it was just like, I was constantly working. I had crazy little kids running around and I was building my real estate business and starting to do well. And so I had to take time off and I took a quarter off and I was like, okay, I'm going to see if I can make it. I'm going to see if I can only do real estate, because it was just, I was like treading water financially and I was exhausted, you know? So I ended up at the end of that quarter, like deciding to make the jump, even though I didn't have a huge savings account, but I had some deals in escrow and I could tell like it was going to be okay. And I just had to, I just couldn't keep up the pace I was keeping up. But someone that is wise and like really would have thought that through would have saved more. You know, I mean, you just don't know what you don't know. And it's the same when you're buying a house. It's like, you think, oh, it's just my 5% or 10% down payment. And can I make the payment? And there's so much more. I mean, when you move, you have to buy trash cans and all the things that add up, like life happens, right? So I would just say like, in hindsight, I would save more money, you know, having like 6 months to a year of income, it would have been so awesome. But the thing is, I don't know if I ever would have been able to do that before jumping. So, you know, it's something that I would recommend if someone can do it, but if they can't, sometimes you just need to jump off the cliff and just make it happen, right?
Build your wings on the way down.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you still based? You're still based in California or San Diego, right?
So I work a lot in San Diego, but I secretly moved and I only told some people, and I'm starting to share it more and more, but I actually live in the Temecula Valley now. And I bought a home in Murrieta in 2018 and I'm so glad I did because the values have pretty much doubled and we bought a really big house right before the pandemic hit. So that was nice to have some space. So we're in Murrieta. My main corporate office is in Temecula in Old Town, which is really fun. And that's where we are now.
So it sounds like you're still in a state of building, which is excellent news. What do you look for when you're trying to bring somebody new onto your team?
It's more of like a character and values fit before I consider bringing anybody on. It has to be somebody that is really humble and willing to work hard and honestly really smart. You have to think fast and well when you're in real estate, you have to think quick. And so someone that's really smart and just really friendly, those are the things that are super important to me when I'm hiring.
What would you say is the biggest challenge you face? And what did you say is the biggest reward that you have?
Yeah, the biggest challenge is probably with staffing, right? It's finding really, really great people that I trust and that my clients will trust that are, and then balancing that with pay, right? Because man, payroll here in California is crazy and taxes and everything. And so, you know, you might find really, really good talent and somebody that's really skilled, but they want to be paid a lot. So just figuring out that balance and real estate's all really like hard job, you know, like you work long hours and you have to go really hard and at a fast pace. So people want to be paid for that, you know, and even if they come in and they're being paid what's average or reasonable, it's usually like, they're like, okay, you need to pay me more because this is like a lot of work, you know? So just kind of balancing that and figuring all that out.
How big is your team now?
So we have 8 people right now and we're growing, you know, and we have a couple people out like on maternity leave and stuff like that. So, but we're good. We're growing.
Congratulations to the growing family.
Yeah.
Speaking about the trends and everything with the recent housing market, what would you tell somebody who is just starting out and they really want to enter the home market? They really want to buy a house.
Yeah.
Biggest advice? Any? Don't go running.
Yeah, I would say my biggest advice is to buy like the nicest place you can for what you can afford. So like, say your budget allows you to buy like something that's $500,000, right? But you live in Hollywood, you know, it's really important to buy something. So it could be that you have to look in a different area. It could and be really open, or it could be that you need to go buy something out of state and Airbnb it or rent it out. And then you still rent for your primary, you know, just to get your foot in the door. But I think it's really important to just buy something, whatever you can buy, you know, because there are places in the US where you can still buy like a 3 or 4 bedroom house in the 100s, you know, and it's still like a decent place to live. So whether it's somewhere you'd want to live or not, you can still buy, everybody can buy something for the most part.
I can't even fathom how jealous I would be to see a house for $100,000 for 4 bedroom.
Right? Can you imagine?
Being a California native, I'm like, I'm sorry, what? How?
Come again?
What? Like even hearing what my parents, because my parents are still in the house that they were in when I grew up when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I love that house. I do know that at some point they're going to have to let it go just because it's a big house for the two of them. But even hearing how much that one has appreciated, I'm like, I'm sorry, what? It's like that, please.
It's shocking. It's shocking. Yeah.
Speaking of advice, what would you say would be the best advice you'd ever received? And what would you say is the worst advice you've ever received? If you have.
that's a really good question. So best advice, honestly, don't want to sound cheesy, but best advice is to put God first and to have fear. The fear of God is a good thing. Because I've just found like when I like try to do things on my own and I just try to like push through and come up with my crazy plans, I just like burn myself out. Nothing really works out. It's just like a nightmare. When I'm like praying and just kind of like seeking like what I should do next and what God wants me to do, like everything goes fine. Like time feels like it's like at a reasonable pace. Like everything feels manageable. I'm just totally grounded. I'm not worried. So just like following God is like the best advice I've ever gotten. And every time I stop doing it, everything goes crazy. And then I would say the worst advice, I have to be careful. Worst advice I probably shouldn't put on recording, but I would say the worst advice is like not paying your taxes and just trying to like be strategic with that and like, you know, trying to invest your money and like, and then, you know, just doing sounds all those like crazy,
incredibly risky. Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's never good. Like it's just, it's at least for me, like I'm just not into that whole kind of life. I just believe you should just save for your taxes, pay your taxes on time, and just be nerdy about it. Because otherwise, they're like the mafia.
That's what I told a friend of mine. I used the exact same example. I was like, they're like the mafia. They'll come for you, and they have the power to take away your wages and everything. Like, just don't.
Oh yeah, that equals Sopranos. It's bad.
Like, it's, yeah. If you weren't doing this, what would you be doing?
I would be an author.
Oh,
like a blogger author chick. And I might become that someday too.
What kind of genre?
Honestly, it would be like lifestyle. So I actually have a book idea in mind that eventually I'll write. And it's like a free, but really it's about freedom, like finding like a freedom lifestyle.
Your career has taken like a few different iterations, as like a lot of people, but have you had any mentors mm-hmm. through that journey? And if so, mm-hmm. how did you find mm-hmm. them? Did you look for them? Was it an organic kind of process?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So it's been a mixture of like intentional and organic mentorship. When I was in college, I actually got some scholarships through a golf academy in San Diego that I was a part of. And so I knew the CEO there, and she was like an indirect mentor to me. It wasn't like a formal mentorship, but she would coach me on things and give me advice and teach me how to be in a board meeting. And she would involve me in like marketing committees and things like that. And so it just really like refined me. She taught me honestly, like details about how to write emails properly and things like that. And then at each job, I've also had some people who've mentored me. When I was at Starbucks, my district manager like really groomed me into being like a really good leader, really good manager. And also while I was there, I had people that were like the anti-mentor. So I would watch and like realize like, okay, this is what I'm not going to do to people when they work for me. And then, you know, at Hewlett Packard, I had a manager that was incredible, that kind of took me under her wing. And, you know, that was when like Mad Men had come out. And so she like, we were starting to realize like, okay, it's still really sexist in the corporate world. And it was very much HP. And so she kind of helped me to navigate like some of those dynamics and just figure out like how to get my point across and that sort of thing. And then I've had real estate coaches. Like I've, from like 6 months into being in real estate, like I've hired coaches. And so cool. I've been a part of like this Tom Ferry coaching organization. That's like a national real estate coaching organization. I'm not a part of it right now, but I now have a coach out of Canada and she's incredible. So at each stage in the journey, like I've sought out people to help me, you know, with whatever I'm working on. And sometimes it's been closure because I have a temper and just learning how to like manage life and learn what to say and how to like have boundaries so you don't like go off on people. And then, you know, also like it's been like sometimes like I need to learn like how to break into the luxury market or how to sell more homes or whatever. So just kind of whatever's next and whatever I want to work on. I try to seek out mentorship, whether it's someone that's in my world that I can learn from and ask questions from, or whether it's someone that I need to actually pay to coach with me on a weekly basis.
Are there any markets that you haven't entered yet that you would like to?
Yes. So I've kind of dipped my toe in the Bay Area market. I really love like Atherton and Palo Alto. I've sold a little bit in Palo Alto and Menlo Park, but I'd really like to have more of a corporate focus there and really be working with executives there. That's kind of my niche anyway. And so I'd love to have more business there and then also more in LA. So something that we're working on.
Nice.
Yeah.
You lead a team of about 8 or 7 to 8. What would you say is your leadership style?
Mm-hmm. I'm very, I'm not a micromanager. So my style is that I set really clear expectations. I try to communicate the vision as clearly as I can, and then make sure that everybody knows what their role is. And then I give them freedom within that role as much as I can. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not only freedom with like what they're actually doing and within like the tasks that they have to do, but also like freedom of location. So even before like the pandemic hit and we all went to Zoom and everything, we were a cloud-based company because I had experience like being in a cubicle and having to sit there all day and be miserable. And so I always vowed like when I started my company that we were not going to do that. So everything like with our organization, we can do from our iPhone. And so like we could literally be like on a beach in Tahiti and sell properties and do what we have to do. And I love it that way. So my style is pretty free.
Well, so did COVID impact you at all in how you operate? It sounds like you were already pretty remote.
Yeah, we really were. In fact, at the time I was at Compass, which is a brokerage here in the area, and they literally were like, get out of the office. We're having a pandemic, like get out. And we were like, what? We're like talking to clients. We're like, okay. And thankfully, like we already had our own thing set up. So we were able to just roll. So COVID impacted me in that I went out on my own. I left Compass. I started realizing they weren't offering me much of anything. And so when they shut their doors and fired their staff and we didn't have any support, I owe that to them. That's great. Because I went out on my own, gave me that push I needed. And then we also started doing like appointments virtually, which was really great. And just really being more efficient with our time. So now instead of like sitting down with a new buyer and meeting with them for an hour, which was way too long for them and us, we have 15-minute like buyer calls.
Nice.
So yeah, when we have new clients, we meet for 15 minutes, we find out what they need, we get everything set up and we roll, and it's just great. So we're just more efficient and we use technology more now.
Are people still doing the virtual showings like previously? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. In fact, it's really great for people moving like from Texas or out of the area. You know, they're now more people are used to doing virtual showings and they can make decisions virtually. And it's really cool.
You have a pretty, as you've said, a pretty busy workload on your plate. How do you unwind? Work-life balance? I don't know. That tends to be more of a idea than actual practice for a lot of people, but
yeah.
Do you strive for it? Do you just like, no, I'm happier with my system?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's something that I'm working on. It's like a constant issue. Tomorrow though, I'm really proud of myself. I'm going to the spa all day.
Nice.
And I only had a few appointments and I rescheduled them all. And I'm just going to the spa because I need it. And I've been working so hard. So I try to like just build it in and kind of force time off if I need it. And then I also like on a weekly basis have like a rhythm, you know, where I'll go and get my nails done or go and do certain things that kind of let me check out for a little bit. And then I love like reading and journaling and going for long walks and stuff like that. But I do live in wine country, so I drink a lot of wine too.
Well, I mean, being in most of California, I feel like we're just conditioned that way.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just my family dynamic as well. Like we always just like, let's open a bottle of wine and let's chat. I don't know.
Yeah, really everything flows better.
Yeah, more relaxing that way. I don't know. It's something.
Exactly.
Do you have any sort of routines or anything that you're like, this helps me set up my day so that I am good to go? Or does that fluctuate so much that not really?
No, I definitely do. I wake up at 4:44 every day. And sometimes it is painful.
So early.
yeah. So I wake up at 4:44 and I like go out on my porch and I like pray and I think about what's bothering me and I pray about it. And I think about the day ahead and kind of strategize. I do a lot of thinking. It's helpful. And then I have a 4:59 call and it's the 5 a.m. club. And it's not just for real estate. It's for like anybody, but we all hop on this like conference call and it's like a quick, like, inspirational or wisdom message, if you will. Just kind of, it's like 5 minutes and do that. And then I just get started with the day after that. Whatever's most important to me is what I work on. So sometimes I go for a walk or I work out. I don't do it every day, but if that's what I want to do, I do that. And then sometimes it's like my house is like shot because I'm a working mom and I work a lot. So sometimes it's getting stuff in order, but it's whatever my main project is for like 90 minutes and then get my kids off to school and review any hot emails because I have clients that are all over the globe. So sometimes they're already emailing me at weird times. Make sure that's all good to go. And then the day starts. But a lot of my prep is like preparing the night before. So making sure my inbox is at zero. I try to do that every day. I have people that help me with that and make sure that I am prepared for the next day is really important too, to make sure that everything's smooth.
I've tried the inbox at zero thing. I failed miserably.
It's really hard. Yeah.
It's good for like maybe a couple weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
And then it just went off. It was like one thing went differently than I thought it was going to with a project. And then it just went. I was like, okay.
Hey, it's not for everybody.
It's like, all right, it's not sustainable. I mean, I have a different system now and it's fine. It's just there's some part of me that always thinks that I'm like, this would be better. I just feel like. But whether or not that's better for me, truly, I don't know.
Yeah.
me a favor and describe your perfect day for you. And that could be professional or otherwise, but what would be a perfect day for you?
Yeah, my perfect day would be waking up with my husband, going out to brunch with my kids, and then like taking them off to school, or so it would be breakfast, taking them to school. So they're at school, and then doing like some important meeting. So, and it could be that I just fly somewhere really quick and then fly back, because I love traveling and I love meeting with really like fabulous people. So having a really quick meeting, and it can be a meeting that's about like business or project or whatever. And then just like having lunch with my bestie at a winery or something, and then picking up my kids and having the freedom to do whatever I want in the afternoon. So it's really simple. It'd be my perfect day.
Any huge goal that you have? I know you kind of touched on it a little bit, but any huge goal that you have for the next like 10 years out, maybe something that's mm-hmm. larger that you have on your bucket list?
Yeah. I want my company to go national. So I need to really work on that. And I'm doing that. So just focused on making the brokerage number one in California, and then going national is like a big goal for me. I also have a couple of books I want to write, and that's pretty much it for me.
I mean, those are pretty good goals. I wouldn't say like, that's it. That's all.
It's mostly work related. I also would love to lose like 100 pounds. So that's another project I'm going to work on in the next 10 years. So
the pandemic has.
And 3 kids. I mean, it's rough, but that's so just wellness too. Just like being kinder to myself and getting really ripped and just being like a badass before I'm 50, you know, like that's my goal.
I'll make sure if I need a bodyguard, I'm going to hire you. Done and done. Yeah. And anything else you would tell somebody who, I don't know, wants to be you?
I would say that it's really important to learn about yourself, like learn how you're wired, learn what motivates you, learn what you're best at and what you were created to be like what your personality is, what your strengths are. And there's tons of like personality assessments and all that kind of stuff. But I've spent a lot of time like with myself, like being really intentional, trying to get to know like what I'm best at, and then going and doing that and not trying to be somebody else. So that's what I would recommend that everybody does, you know, and it's a constant journey, figuring out how you're wired and what makes you happy and doing that. So I don't do laundry anymore. There's a lot of things I just don't do anymore because I am not good at them and I can have other people do them. So just focusing on what you're best at and like learning what that is and pursuing that is, I think, the best journey ever.
These next four are just how I wrap up every single interview. They're light, they're whatever. What is your least favorite word?
So it's when the word "the" is used improperly. No. Or it's like when is it a preposition that goes right before a word, right? I'm not like a English grammar queen or anything, but like my husband will say, I'm going to go make a lunch. And I just can't. It's like you make lunch, you eat lunch. You don't make a lunch. Like, I don't know. It just bothers me, you know? Or if someone says like the something and it's not proper.
Well, I think also anything coming from a romantic partner will always, they just have a way of delivery sometimes. What was that?
Like, okay. Let's go to lunch. We're not going to go to a lunch, you know?
Everyone has it. Everyone has their thing.
That's fine.
What is your favorite word?
My favorite word is yes. I love when people tell me yes. Yes is a good word. And when I decided to like be a yes and be really open, I started making way more money, you know? I mean, and you'll, like when you encounter people, like you can tell if they're like, yeah, let's roll, let's do this, you know? And if they're like a yes, or if they're like a no, and they're always like critical and like closed off, closed-minded. So yes is my favorite.
I agree. Yeah, usually the yes people, they don't see the obstacles as much, or they don't let that hinder their direction as much.
Yeah.
What would you say is your least favorite sound?
I don't like, you know, that like cringy, like nails on a chalkboard or like on any like surface that's just not okay and your nails shouldn't be on it.
Yeah, I'm cringing because
like scratching, screeching. That's a problem. And I generally like don't like excessive noise, like it's like conflicting with it, with other sounds, you know, like just when it's like chaos.
For me, nails on a chalkboard, especially for some reason, that like it's a special cringe that goes through my body in a visceral way. Like even you mentioning it, I usually, you're not the first person who said that. And every time it did this,
I saw a physical reaction from you.
Because it like it just real. The idea of it. But, oops, as I hit the mic. Just the idea of it makes me like, oh, I don't. Nope. So yeah, obviously I share that with you. What is your favorite sound?
I think the ocean. I love when like the waves are crashing on rocks and just that whole vibe. It's so cool. It's my fave.
I think especially being California natives, pretty much everyone that I've spoken to for this and asked that question have mentioned something involving ocean, beach, water, waves.
Really?
Wow. Without exception. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure. Yeah. They've always in motion. So I think it's just something that we're conditioned and it soothes us in that way.
Yeah.
It's not just
we're wired to love it.
That's how we do it. Those are all of my questions.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. That's perfect. It. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it, Jess.
Yes. So good to see you.
You too.
Well, have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Take care.
Take care. Bye. See you later.
Bye.
Oops, not that way. That concludes my conversation with Jessica Foote. Thanks to Jessica for sitting down with me. I kind of loved what she said about being a yes person. As a retired quote-unquote no person, I can attest that life is way more fun when you just live in the yes. Try it. I dare you. Email me and tell me all about it if you do. Like always, if you liked this episode or any others, tell your friends, leave a good review, all that jazz. Questions, comments, hit me up via email as well. The address is jackofnotradespodcast@gmail.com. Also in the show notes if you need to see that written out. That's it for this week. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And when in doubt, just say yes. Take care. Thanks for listening.